During the past 5 years, one out of four Americans have changed churches. 4 out of 10 Americans have switched addresses. A majority of us have a new job, different from what we had 5 years ago. And over half of us live at a different financial level than we did in 1987. All of which says that we are a society that has a lot of change that is going on. Sometimes it's forced upon us. Sometimes we choose it. Sometimes we seek it. There inevitably, just statistically, are those among us here today who are looking for another job, who are planning to change address, or considering finding a different church. All important decisions. Decisions we know that tend to spin out for a long time to come in our biographies. In fact, the decisions that we make in these regards can determine our health, can determine our happiness, may impact who our children will meet and date and marry. A whole lot of life for a generation to come may be determined by the decisions that are made. The good news is that we have a whole lot more information to work with than people in the past had. We have computers and consultants and counselors. We have those who say that human knowledge doubles every 2.5 years, so I guess theoretically we have twice as much information to make these important decisions than we did 2.5 years ago. And yet, at the same time, it seems at least as if more and more bad choices are being made. That people choose to make these decisions and then later regret them. It's almost as if we are coming out long on knowledge, but short on wisdom. And that's why the words of James 1, verses 5 through 8 on page 1880 is such good news. That if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt. Because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. I think to understand what is really important in this teaching from the Bible, the best way to do it is to have a case study. That is, a real-life situation, and we can kind of check out the principles and the opportunities up against a real-life choice. But rather than me picking one, let's each one of us choose our own. Because I think I'm safe in saying that just about everybody here has some situation that we're currently dealing with that would be a grand opportunity to test out what the Bible here says. Surely there's somebody here who's looking for a job. And it may well be that there are several who are deciding about whether to stay married or to get a divorce. Or there are those who have a relationship that right now is under very special and unusual stress. Or there are those who have to make a key financial decision. Maybe it has to do with investments or a house or something else. And then there are those who are dealing with important spiritual matters, a decision or a choice that has to do with a relationship with God that may be a choice that will determine forever. Or maybe it's a habit that with the start of the year, nearly a month ago, there was a resolution to deal with a habit in 1994 that's hung on for a long time. But now, a month into the new year, already the old habit has prevailed. And it's time to decide whether to just give up or to hang in there and try to change it. So take that, whatever it is. Your own choice, and let's apply that to the situation that is described in the seeking for wisdom in James chapter 1. Of course, we have to know what is meant by wisdom. And it's important to understand that wisdom is not knowledge. Knowledge is important, but knowledge is facts. Knowledge is information. Knowledge is the data that we need in order to make a decision. It seems we can never get enough. Some people try to. Some people wait weeks and months and years, and they delay decisions until the decisions are made for them because they never feel that they have quite gathered enough information. But no matter how much we get, knowledge does not guarantee that a right choice will be made. Good choices depend on what we do with the information, not just the information we have. Also, wisdom is not intelligence. We're all familiar with people who have very high IQs, but don't have common sense. So they may be brilliant in some things, but they just are very unwise in everyday decisions. So the wisdom that is here being talked about, and elsewhere in the Bible, is really the ability to apply knowledge, to apply intelligence in the best possible way. Let me give you an interesting example. In the cold wave that swept the eastern United States now, what, a week and a half ago? Actually, it seems as if it's still going on. Anyway, when it was at its worst, there was a man who made the news in Ohio who had his gas line frozen, and so his car wouldn't run. So he had a certain amount of information and knowledge, and he actually had the correct diagnosis. He knew what was wrong. The gas line was frozen, and the car wouldn't start until that was remedied. What he did was he took a gallon of gas and put it in a container and took it into his kitchen and put it on the stove and turned on the gas flame in order to heat it up. And his rationale in this was that he would get the gas going at a boil, and then he would pour it into the gas tank of his car, and that would then melt out the frozen gas line. The end of the report, they explained that he burned down both his neighbor's houses on both sides, in addition to his own house. They were both completely gone. Now, I use this as an example of the fact that he was not wise in what he did. So he had the information, but he did not use the information particularly well. The wisdom that is being talked about in James 1:5 is practical wisdom. But there's another piece to it, and that is it is also practical wisdom that is spiritual and moral. I suppose the best way to think of it is to try to imagine if God were in my situation, whatever the situation each of us chose, if God were in that situation and he had the same amount of information that I have and he had the same resources available to me, so he has the limitations that I deal with, how would God behave? What would God do with that information and how would God deal with that situation? In other words, if God were in your marriage, what would he do? If God were dealing with your finances, how would he handle them? If God were struggling with your job or your health or some other problem, what would be his approach? If any of you lacks wisdom, ask God and it will be given to you. That is, God will communicate to us how he would deal with our situation if he were in our shoes. I read that and I think to myself, well, that's me. I can get lots of information and I face lots of dilemmas, but I really often just don't know what to do. I don't have the wisdom that I need to figure my way out of the situation that I'm in. And so I need to ask God so that I'll know what is the wise thing to do. And I imagine what a difference it would make in all of our lives if we could get this wisdom and then we could act on it in a way to behave as if God were walking in our situation. Question is, would God be willing to give us that wisdom? Indeed he would. God gives generously to all who ask without finding fault. When it comes to generosity, God has no equal. This is the same God who so loved the world that he gave his only son, so that whoever believes in him should not eternally perish, but eternally live. He is the God who is the giver of every good and perfect gift that we have. It is as if God is waiting to be asked, and he wants to give to us this supernatural wisdom. A few weeks ago, I bought an electronic gadget that's called a VCR Plus. Some of you may have them or you've seen them advertised. they don't quite say this in the ad, but they are designed for people of somewhat lesser technical and intellectual ability when it comes to programming a VCR, which I think is probably the majority of Americans. And for $35, you get this device that looks a lot like a channel changer. And it has the the keypad that's on there. And all you need to do is set this on top of your VCR or any place in front of the VCR in the room up to, I think it's 12 feet away. And you put in a code. Every TV show has a code. And the VCR plus code is listed in the television directory that's in the newspaper every day. So you pick any show you want and then see what the five or the six digits are. And all you need to do is punch those digits in. That's it. You don't have to put in the time or the date or any of that other stuff. And then you can do this a week or more in advance. And when the time comes for that show to begin, this little device turns on the VCR, it records the program, and it shuts it off afterwards. So all this, I don't know, it sounded good to me. So I bought it. Bought it, and I brought it home, and I read the instructions, which I think were written by the same person who wrote the instructions to my VCR. And I spent a couple hours fooling around with this thing and did everything that you're supposed to do, tested it, and it didn't work. Tried it a few more times, still nothing. With the instructions, there's a troubleshooting section. And the last part of it is a 1-800 number that you can call. And I don't know, maybe I'm easily embarrassed, but I was reluctant to call. I was afraid they'd ask me my name. And yeah, I thought I could say something like Rocky or maybe Elvis or something like that. And I didn't say this, but it was almost as if we all knew what this conversation was. It was this guy calling up saying, "Hi, this is stupid calling. I'm the guy that couldn't program my VCR. Now I can't even program the thing that's supposed to make it easy to program the VCR." But I wanted to look good to my family. I'd spent $35, so I, in the privacy of my room, I called. And this technician answered. And he was really nice, which was the first surprise. And he was very gracious, and he asked me a series of questions. And then he started going step by step through what I needed to do. And it was almost as if he were seeing this in terms of him being there. And this is what he would do if he were in this situation. Only he described it to me, and I did it. And it finally worked. It actually worked. Now, wouldn't it be great if there were a 1-800 number like that for all the situations in life? All the questions we have? All the problems we face? Imagine if there were a number that we could dial, an 800 number, free. We could call up and someone would answer who would be gracious and generous and would tell us how to deal with raising children, managing money, getting along with the difficult people around us and the other 10,000 and more decisions that comprise our lives? Well, we can. For you see, the instruction book that comes with our Christian lives has a troubleshooting section. And James 1:5, in that troubleshooting section, says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him." Now, don't push the analogy so far as to think of God as some type of supercomputer. God is not a machine. It is not a matter of pushing his button or dealing with God as if he were voicemail and getting the tones right and listening to the message. Understand that God is a person as we are persons. There are some issues where there is a simple and immediate answer. Sometimes, though, God must work indirectly. Sometimes it takes a couple of years to get fixed the things that have gotten messed up. But understand that God invites us, he gives to us the opportunity to call him, and he always gives his wisdom to those who ask. He is very generous. And he doesn't find fault. I'm glad that's explained. Because we've all experienced people who are initially very generous, but the second and third time around, they're fault finders. These are the people who give a gift, but when you need to get something else, you need that person's help the next time, they say, well, you didn't manage it very well the last time. You didn't follow my advice the way you were supposed to. Maybe you've had situations where, or the American Cancer Society or United Way, you made collections in your neighborhood, and you go back to a house where last year they were very generous, but when you go to ask for a gift this year, they're very critical. They say, well, you know, you didn't cure cancer last year, so why should I, you know, give you money this year? Or I don't like the way that the charity is run and things that are done. I'll tell you, if there's any donor who could find fault, it's God. Because people often come to him with their needs, to which he generously responds. And then we don't handle very well the money that he gives to us. We don't take his advice the way we should. We receive power from him, and we tend to abuse that power. He gives to us opportunities, and we often squander those opportunities. He entrusts with us the message of salvation, with the expectation that we relay it to other people, but we get busy and engrossed in our own issues, and we fail to do well that which he has asked us to do. And then we find ourselves going back to God a second time and a third time and a hundredth time. And you would expect that God would say, you again, why don't you do it the way I tell you? Only to discover that he gives generously to all without finding fault. What a God. I wonder how James figured this out. Oh, I suppose God could have just told him. Maybe kind of dictated it and he just wrote it down. But my better guess is that he figured it out from his own experience. Perhaps one day James just didn't know what to do. He was really up against it. He fought a lot. He took out parchment and paper and pen, and he made a list of the pros and the cons. If I choose this way or if I choose that way. He asked his friends for advice. But when he gathered all the information, all the counsel, he still didn't know what to do. He couldn't resolve the riddle of his own circumstance. And so he prayed. Maybe he didn't know whether that was okay or not, but he prayed and he asked God for wisdom. And God gave to him supernatural insight, something he had never thought of before. A way to deal with this that was just like the way God would deal with it. But he didn't do it. And because he didn't do it, things got far worse instead of far better. And so he went back to God and said, God, I'm sorry. I really messed this up. And God, the advice that you gave to me before, it isn't really going to work now because everything's different than it was before. So God, could you give me wisdom one more time so I could straighten this out? And God gave it to him. Generously. James brought up the first time, but God didn't. He found no fault with him. Except afterwards, James had an alternate idea. And instead of following the wisdom that came from God, he tried something else. And it was a disaster. Now he was really in trouble. But he was embarrassed. He didn't want to go and ask God a third time or more. He was afraid that God would chew him out. He was afraid that God would point out all of the things that he had done wrong. And he just wasn't ready for that. He was beaten up enough. The circumstance was painful already. And he just didn't want to compound this with getting another beating from God. But he became desperate. There was no place else to turn. There was no one else to help him. And so one day, James fell down on his knees, and he lifted up his hands, and he said, oh, God, I need help. God, give me wisdom. Help me figure out what to do with what I've got. Help me to get out of the situation that I'm in. God, what would you do? God told him. Maybe it was that day that James sat down and wrote, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. There was, though, one other lesson that James felt He had to tell people. Because if they don't know this, it won't work. And so he adds that when a person asks, he must believe and not doubt. Because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. It is a description of someone who sits on the spiritual fence, who wants it both ways, God's way and some other way. John Bunyan, the author of Pilgrim's Progress, wrote about a character he made up whose name was Mr. Facing Both Ways. And that's kind of a description of this person. This is the person who wants to have it his way and wants to have it God's way. St. Augustine, the great leader of the early Christian church, lived an immoral life and considered becoming a Christian, but didn't want to give up, really, he didn't want to give up the sexual immorality that was so much a part of who he was. So he was sort of torn on what to do. So one day, Augustine, by his own admission, went and he prayed, "Oh God, grant me purity, but not yet." You see, that's double-mindedness. Actually, the word, the Greek word that James used when he first wrote this in century number one, was not double-minded, but double-souled. It's as if a person has two souls inside, one for God and one against God. It's a choice that has to be made. God will not answer the prayer of the person who seeks supernatural wisdom unless that person first makes up his or her mind for God. Jesus said in Matthew 22:37, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. It's a precondition. God does not ask us to be perfect. He does not tell us that we have to know everything. He doesn't say that we have to be more intelligent than other people. But he does ask that we have hearts and minds and souls for him and for him alone. Otherwise, we should not expect him to answer our request for supernatural wisdom. Perhaps that appears to be very demanding. But when you think about it, that's pretty much the way most things are in our lives. If you have long-distance telephone service, which I assume that everyone here does, you had to make a choice between MCI and AT&T and Sprint and any one of the other long-distance carriers. You can't have them all. So that when you dial one in a long-distance area code and number, you go through the carrier that you chose, not some other carrier. It's a mutually exclusive system. Or if you work for a company that gives you health insurance options or an HMO, you might have an array of a half a dozen, more or less. But you can't have them all. At least once each year during that window of opportunity, you choose how you're going to have health care provided for you. And you can't have more than one. Or coming up on April 15th, the government says that you can file a 1040 or a 1040A or a 1040EZ. If you're married, you can have separate returns or you can have a joint return, but you can't do them all. You've got to pick which one. And you've got a way, which is most advantageous for you. And when you make the choice, you exclude others. Last week, I met a woman who was born in Great Britain, has lived in this country for a number of years, and just in the last several months was naturalized to become a United States citizen. She said that it was not particularly difficult. She did not have to learn a new language. She enjoys living in the United States. Her husband is an American. And everything went fine until she stood before a federal judge. And the judge said that before she could become a citizen of the United States, she had to renounce her allegiance to any other sovereign. And it was only when she renounced her allegiance to the Queen of England and her British citizenship that she was able to become a citizen of the United States. Look, if a phone company can do it, if our businesses can do it with health insurance, if the IRS requires it, if that's a mandate for becoming a citizen of the United States, It is not an unreasonable thing for God to say, you can't be double-minded. You got to make up your mind, are you for me or are you not for me? And when you choose to be whole-souled or whole-minded for God, that means that there are a lot of things that need to be given up. It is pledging allegiance to God and to God alone. Now, we started with each one of us choosing our own problem, our own decision for which we need wisdom. And then we've read through what the Bible here teaches, and we've thought through all that it means. But now let's try it. Let's take the situation that each of us brought to mind, and we've got a couple of extra minutes. Let's take a little bit of time in private prayer. And here's what I would suggest. That we first of all tell God that we pledge our allegiance to Him. That we choose Him 100% to be the God of our lives. Because what that does is that clears the channels. And that barrier needs to first be eliminated, or else we've been told in advance that this prayer won't work. Once that's done, then let's each of us tell God the situation that we're dealing with. The decision for which we need wisdom. And then ask God what He would do if He were in our shoes. How would He decide? How would He handle it? It is asking God for the wisdom that He has promised to give. Let's do it. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. Our God, you are all-knowing and all-wise, and it is breathtaking to hear you say that you will share your wisdom with us, that you would show us what you would do if you were in our situation. God, hear the pledge of allegiance of our hearts to you and to you alone. We choose you, number one, to the exclusion of any other allegiance. And now we tell you the situations we face, the problems that are ours, the decisions that we must make. And we ask, God, that you give to us the wisdom that you have promised. And we ask for the grace to take your wisdom and to do as you would do. Asking and promising, in Jesus' name, amen.
But Ivan and Elena, we welcome you to Wooddale Church, and as Elena's being seated, I'd like to invite Ivan to come on up, and we've asked him to share a few words of what it's like to come to America. They're originally from Russia, and Tony comes as his translator this morning and to share a word about moving into the Habitat for Humanity home that we helped build last summer.
We're glad to see all of you.
Всех, кто помогал нам в строительстве дома, также всех тех, кто молился за нас, всех остальных.
Everybody who helped us to build the house, who prayed for us, and everybody else who's here.
Вам, наверное, интересно знать немного о нас.
You probably want to know a little bit of our life and how we get here.
Хотя на строительстве я не мог сильно много разговаривать, потому что я очень мало говорю по-английски.
But when I was there and when the house was building, I couldn't speak that much English because I'm not a very, very good English. So
родились мы Лена и я родились мы в России.
Me and my wife, we were born in Russia.
С детства мы знали о Боге, и в 10 лет я повстречался лично с Богом.
We know God when we were childs, because we were born in a Christian family, and I know the God when I was 10 years old.
В совместной жизни с Леной Бог нам дал 5 детей.
With God give us 5 children with together with wife.
Это было все как бы одна часть нашей жизни.
That was like a first part of our life.
Вторая часть началась с того, что вся наша семья засобиралась в Америку.
The second part of our life became when we were deciding to go to America.
Год мы ждали ответа с американского посольства.
The first year we've been waiting for the answer from American embassy.
Во втором году мы ждали, пока сделаются все бумаги.
And the second year we've been waiting when all the papers will be done from the Russian side.
Когда мы прощались в России, мы с нашей семьей, мы одни из самых первых уехали. Мы просили Бога, чтобы Он вперед нас пошел в Америку. И в пути был с нами и в Америке.
When everything was already done and we've been saying goodbye to all our families because they were the first who came to America from our big family, they've been praying and asking God to be in front of all their life here in America.
И Бог, конечно, слышал наши молитвы.
And the God, of course, hears our prayings.
После того, как мы приехали сюда, прошел еще один год.
After when we leave here 1 year,
мы повстречали строительную программу, которая называется Habitat.
We found a program which called the Habitat.
И мы благодарны очень тем людям, всем вам за ваши молитвы и за вашу помощь в строительстве нашего дома.
And we would like to thank you very much for all your help and all your praise that you pray for our family and to help us with our needs.
Пусть Бог благословит вас.
Bless God all of you.
Благодарим за внимание.
Thank you.